Welcome back to The Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and brown professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your careers. Good evening. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds. I am an author, management consultant, and interim chair of the Management, Marketing, and Public Administration Department in Higher Ed. My areas of research is toxic followership. That's right. Why do people follow bad people? I consider myself a workplace toxicologist, helping you to dismantle the poison people bring to work. Now, as you know, I am not alone. I have a wonderful co-host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Dr. Lonnie, let's roll.
Hey, Dr. Wendy, it's always great to be here with you. I am Lonnie Morris. I am a management professor and consultant. I spend most of my time helping really, really smart people untangle the crazy webs that we spin at work. My goal is always to help you hate your job less. It's super exciting to do this with you, and I'm so excited about our guest today. But I know Dr. Wendy has another message for us first.
That's right, because you know we like to keep it real. But I'm going to give you our disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated.
Except me. But I say you can take that and run with it. Take it to the bank. Tonight we're talking about... The title of the show is No, Get Somebody Else to Do It, right? So really talking about saying no at work and creating boundaries. And to join us and to help us walk through this, we have the perfect guest, Dr. Candace Hunter, who is a management consultant and professor, and her work spans many industries and organizations with the goal of assisting with optimizing employee performance and retooling their processes for greater efficiency. For over two decades, she's facilitated transformation of people and cultures within organizations and institutions. She's been the district director of compensation and HR. She's been the chief of staff, vice president for HR, as well as the chair of the business department. She is the founder of Fluency Management, where she helps leaders create cultures of workplace excellence by helping people realize their optimal potential. She is a 2021 recipient of the Donald A. Gatsky Award for her outstanding work exploring organizational culture, personal values, and the derailment of women leaders. In her spare time, she develops courses for a Masters of Human Resources program at the University of Richmond. Dr. Candace!
Welcome to the Access Point. That makes me sound like I'm doing a whole bunch of stuff, and I like it. I like it. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here with you today. So excited.
Thank you so much for taking time out of what we just described as your busy schedule to be with us. This is going to be fun. So we're talking about saying no. And as I mentioned earlier, I think the idea of saying no to someone at work is really about creating boundaries. But I think it's important as we get started with tonight's show that we set a baseline for the folks who are listening. So what is saying no about? What does it mean to create or to speak about boundaries? And I say this because I saw this in the Washington Post about a month ago. It says that everyone is setting boundaries, but do they really know what it means? And so when this article, they described it as guidelines people set to help them maintain healthy habits and relationships or to protect themselves according to their comfort levels and values. You are the senior HR professional here, Dr. Candace. What are we talking about when we say boundaries?
Well, boundary is one of those really sexy words that has emerged in our language and our society about, you know, telling people what they can and cannot do to you. But in the workplace, this doesn't really show up quite the way we intend it. What do I mean by that? So I say I create a boundary and I don't want to work after work hours, right? And usually,
you know, sign me up.
We tell people, you know, I'm clocking out, I'm gone, I'm done. But boss A calls and you answer the phone. Coworker B calls and you answer the phone. So then you say to your spouse, I don't know, or your partner or your family, I don't know why they always call me
at work, I have boundaries. I don't want people to call me at work. So what's happening there? There is a disconnect between the personal value you set for yourself and the organizational culture, which says that we are still working and we need you. So therefore, we're going to contact you. So we have to retool the word, the language that we've created around boundary with action. So a boundary is this. I don't work off after my work hours unless it's a real emergency or unless I want to work, right? And so when boss A calls, voicemail, right? When coworker B calls, decline. That's a boundary.
Decline.
A boundary is about action setting. And action setting is about you saying, hey, this is what I value for myself. My time with my children, my partner, my spouse, my friends is important to me. And I want to respect that. And by respecting that, I need you to respect it as well. But if I continually answer the phone or respond to the late night emails and so on and so forth, I said it was a boundary, but my action is different. And unless you create an action that stops that, guess what people are going to do? By nature, they're going to keep doing what's comfortable and natural to them, which is I need help. I know who has the tools to help me, and therefore I'm going to call them, right? So it's really, really important that if we set that as a personal value for ourselves, we really create the action steps behind it so that we are working towards realizing that for ourselves and not just saying it, right? Don't pay lip service to it. Don't do it, be about it. That's what that means for
us. I love that. And so right after this show is over, I'm going to block Dr. Wendy so she doesn't call me.
You did not hear it first.
I know it's 7:00 in the morning. you know what, Dr. Candace, I'm thinking about all that you said, and I'm wondering about what part of your life does that work for you? I remember as a younger person, as a mommy, it was different for me. I had to leave. It wasn't a question as to whether or not you appreciated my boundaries. When they were charging me for the daycare, $15 every 5 minutes after 6:30, it wasn't an option.
I'm out.
Gone. You know, 5:00, 5:01, see my smoke. I was done. And
my smoke.
But I think, I'm thinking though now, it may be different. Maybe COVID helped us to appreciate boundaries now. If you ran out the door, it was seen as, look at who's running out the door. I never thought that I had to explain it, but there were people who did not have the circumstances that I had and chose to stay afterwards, but it wasn't me. And if it was just for show, it really wasn't important to me. So I'm wondering about how those who are listening would think about where are you in your career and what those boundaries look like and how realistic is it to set it so that it is acceptable? Like you say, after work, you know, don't call me. But how about the weekends where they break the rules?
Right.
Where my emergency got to be your emergency because I need you. Right. I need you.
Well, there's a couple of schools of thought around, you know, when to show up, when the parameters of the day that are defined by the employer is over. So if you're a non-exempt employee, if you're an individual contributor, and you're working your way up, if they call you after 5 and you answer the phone, then you get paid for that a time and a half if it's over 40 hours in a work week. Let's just be really clear about there are compliance, federal and state mandates around that, right? So there's one bucket. And you might choose to say, well, I'm growing in my career. And even though this is a boundary I'd like to establish or set, I'm going to let that go or I'm going to relax that for now because I see a potential in this for being recognized as a responsible person. Just remember what you do now is what you have to do later. You can't do it in the honeymoon phase and then decide that when you get to the marriage, you don't want it anymore because then it creates this sort of fracture in the relationship, right? So the sooner you establish what those boundaries are for yourself, and again, it goes back to personal values. So personal values specifically is socially and personally shared ideas of how you expect individuals to behave, right? So it's what you have in your mind of how something should be. And each of us have our own different set of personal values. But within organizational culture, personal values is critically important to setting the overall tone of how that organization works. So specifically to your question, I think as you climb the career ladder, even though I had boundaries in my mind, I didn't exercise them because I really wanted to be seen as responsible and going the extra mile and being in the position to be recognized and seen as someone that would do more and be more at the expense of my personal sanity, my personal health, my personal well-being, right? And did that pay off for me? Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't, right? I mean, just being realistic and authentic about the realities of your expectation or the realities of your action, right? And so it's really important that some of us might find ourselves, especially in Black and brown spaces where the research backs this statement up, that you have to perform extra, more, above and beyond, double the work.
Or we bring that to work thinking that's what we should do.
We think that's what we should because those are the examples of what we see. Because we see mediocrity in front of us being performed. And if you're talking about the things that I study about in gender, you see this playing out. You see men, irrespective of color, being promoted when you know they're not necessarily the best candidate, right? And especially if you go to whatever. There's a recent research published by McKinsey and Group and Lean In, which is a nonprofit organization, which talks about, this study is recent, so of 2022-2023. And it's to every 100 white men that are promoted. This is a gendered study, so we're looking at women. To every 100 white men that are promoted, 91 white women are promoted. And this we're talking about from individual contributor to middle management, right? Mm-hmm. For every 100 white men, there are 89 Asian women, 76 Latinas, and 54 Black women. Right. That's a horrible statistic. And this is in this is not in 1986. It's not in 1994. Right. It's today. That is a recent research publication. Right. And so, again, when you're thinking about get somebody else to do it, oftentimes that's a figment of our internal thoughts. Right. And then we figure out how to navigate and how to tread the treachery waters, if you will. And I really have to give it to our newest generations of workers. They don't play that stuff. They'll tell you no.
I love it.
Right?
I love it.
Yeah, but, you know, the folks like us that's 50 and beyond, or even in their late 40s and
speak for yourself.
Look at here. I said, or even in late 40s, or whatever you are, young buck.
25.
Right, pretend. 25, pretend. 25 plus a double tax. You know, so the youngest generation of workers, they will tell you to, you know, to stuff it, and they will find another job. I don't know how they make it in these streets, but they are figuring it out, right? They are YouTubing and Instagramming and influencing their way to different ways to sustain themselves and their families in terms of their bridled or their, that's the wrong word. I think they're masked by inexperience, right? So the rest of us are like, oh my God, you can't do that. They have no experience to tell that they can't do that. They're just going to do it. And then they have examples of people who are doing it and are fine. And so again, it's where you are in your career, what's important to you. I think just the idea of empowering people that they can say no, that no is a complete sentence, is one thing to get to. And now how you prioritize that, how that shows up for you, depends on your corporate culture, right?
Yeah. So I love that. And our producer has brought that up before. No is a complete sentence, right? So when we think of this idea of saying no, and I love that you said, Dr. Candace, sometimes that's in your head, but it doesn't always come out the same way. I think there are some general guidelines that I've read about, and this was in Forbes and in August, how to say no to additional responsibilities at work. So you say no when the request puts your primary job responsibilities at risk, when it's not in your scope of work, so they're asking you to do something that's beyond what you normally do, when there's no end in sight, and you say this request is going to keep coming because what you're asking me to do cannot get finished, and when the request is unrealistic. But I would venture to say there are always some additional things that we need to understand as people of color around this. So when is it okay for us to say no? Because I think sometimes even in those four, it still might not be okay for us depending on the culture. So when is it okay for us to say no?
First of all, that sounds like that's a you problem, or that's a you problem. I mean, just, you know, speaking in very, you know, colloquial kind of term, that sounds like a you problem, right? So I think one of the things that people have to show up to work with is a voice, period, right? So you have to show up to work, you have to show up in any space with your voice. You have to determine who is it that you're going to be. As confident as I show up in some spaces sometimes, at work, I wasn't that girl, right? Mm. I would always be like, you know, everybody's like, oh, she's so this and she's so that. But at work, I wasn't necessarily always that. I was confident in my abilities. Sometimes, you know, you falter, you don't do things well, or you think you're killing it, but you're not, you know, and people showing up to give you real time feedback or being truthful about those things are often not the case for Black and Brown folks in the workplace, right? Because there's institutional systemic biases and just comfort to systems that people don't want to deviate from, right? So those things are showing up. But in terms of that you problem that you just mentioned in many different ways, I think one of the things that people can do is, you know, I appreciate that you believe I can add value to something that's usually reserved for leadership or for someone in a more senior position, right? I would love to discuss this more with you so I can understand the full scope of responsibility. Where can I contribute effectively? You know, what is the end goal in mind? Right. So you got to show up talking your stuff. You got to know what it is you want to do. But you also have to have the language so that when they report you to HR or they start writing you up or something like that, because it's coming, that you have some sort of intelligence and thought around why is it that you're being asked to do something that's completely outside the scope of your job responsibility. So here's what I teach in my classes, and here's what I share with leaders, and here's what I talk to managers of all levels, frontline managers all the way up to presidents and CEOs. Job description is a legal document. End of sentence. Why is a job description a legal document?
Wow.
First and foremost,
drop the mic.
First and foremost, if you were to ask for, if you're differently abled and you're asking for an accommodation, or your employer doesn't give you an accommodation, and you file some kind of external claim or internal claim, the first thing they're going to say is, "Let me see the job description," because they have to determine if the minimum required skills for the job is you can perform with or without assistance for your disability, legal. Yeah. If you get hurt at the job, the first thing the workers claim adjuster is going to ask for is the job description, because they have to make sure, does your injury prevent you from doing the work, right? Mm. If you file an EEO claim for unequal pay or gender discrimination or some other protected class discrimination, the first thing they're going to ask for is the job description, because I want to see if you're doing the same job as I'm doing, right? Regardless of what job title they do give you, right? I want to see if you're performing the same essential functions within that role. And what am I paying you? And so again, a legal document, right, is going to show up there. So if you're being asked to do all of those things in addition to your job description, I think it's fair for you to say, hey, this is my job description last we talked. Is something changing? Is my role changing? Are the responsibilities that I'm going to be assessed for in my performance during performance?
Good stuff.
On here, like, you know, what are we really talking about, right? So again, we are saying not that that last line on that job description that reads other duties as assigned has to be within the scope of your responsibility, of your pay grade, of the expectations, right? People and organizations can't ask you. That's another legal right. They can ask you to do something outside the scope, right? But does it have an end date? Are you being paid an additional something for that, right? Because it's totally outside the scope of your existing role. Is the job fundamentally changing? So you need to be reclassified. That's a conversation with the manager and HR. So there's many things that could be happening there. Typically, for Black and Brown folks in the workplace, when those things happen, unless we're a really sassy person, right? We're just going to do it. We just do it.
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. Typically, jobs that are protected by unions and so on and so forth, they tend to get a little bit more sassy in the workplace. Like, yeah, I'm not doing that. They are the king and queen of get somebody else to do that. That's not in my job description. And I love that for them. But organizations have a responsibility to be fair and equitable to their employees. And employees have a responsibility to do a good job and perform well, because that's what you're being paid for. So I think in a senior HR leadership role, I pride myself on people saying she is fair and equitable to our employees, and she looks out for the organization. I want to have a good balance between that. And sometimes I have to tell managers, yeah, no, that's not okay. And sometimes I have to tell employees, you're doing the most, right? So, you're doing the most. So, but it has to be a balance between the employer's expectation and your desire to meet that based on what they hired you for. And if something is changing, then you have the language to say, hey, I believe this is outside the scope of my responsibility. I'd love to talk to you about if this is a temporary change or will this be a permanent change to my job description? And I'd like an updated copy. You are well within your right to demand that.
Get an updated. Wait till I go to the office on Monday.
Period. You're well within your right. If it's a temporary change, it could be a temporary change. If it's within the scope, it doesn't necessarily have to come with more pay. And I tell people, more of the same work ain't more pay work, right?
That's right.
But that's the employer side of me. Well, you know, I used to do this, and you know. So if you're a professional supporting maybe one executive, then that's the thing. But if I had five executives, come on, that's not the same.
Yeah.
But if you have one more. Maybe it's the same, right? So it just depends.
So what do you think about how that comes to you? So sometimes the boss doesn't just say these are other duties as assigned and give it to you. They really dress it up and put the whipped cream and the cherry on top. They dangle the carrot, right? I know this is your base salary, but you could work all the overtime you want. Really? That's one.
Or let's just see how well you do this. You're doing such a wonderful job. And then we'll just consider you for the next position. It's just not your time right now. We want to see how well you do. Meanwhile, they're asking you to do all those other duties as assigned at will, just however they choose and please. So what is it that we can do to protect ourselves from those things happening?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I mentioned not too long ago, is really asking for clarity around the expectations, asking for a timeline of these new duties, asking that if the job description is, because sometimes, to be fair and to be honest, some organizations go through rapid change. You know, they change for the change, right? They're not letting that change solidify and operate in the new norm before another change begins. And in those instances, employees often find themselves in a very confused state of what is it that I'm really responsible for, right? And I can't seem to figure out if I'm coming and going. One of the things that when hiring managers, because hiring managers also will approach HR on these things. Well, I'm asking, you know, Dr. Lonnie to do this, that, and the other. And he has an attitude about it, right? And Dr. Wendy said,
I'm going to say because Dr. Candy said.
Dr. Wendy said, it's 5 o'clock and she got something with her friends and she's gone for the day, right? I think that hiring managers have that same sort of challenge in the workplace, right? And so one of the things I say to senior leaders, because that's mostly the space in which I operate in terms of where I am now in my career, is one of the things I say to senior leaders is often when senior leaders are making big organizational-wide changes or big process-wide changes, they are in the C-suite, in the executive suite, in the president's cabinet, having discussions at that level for many moons, sometimes for months at a time. Yeah. They're talking through it. They're having sidebar conversations about it. They're talking with outside consultants or vendors or so on and so forth, right? And they have made a decision. They might involve a couple of key stakeholders that they've asked to keep some information confidential as they're building this process, right? They're trying to flush it out within a leadership capacity before they bring it forward, right? And then they bring it forward and then they tell you the town hall, they bring it forward, they tell you the town hall will be 3 days, or they tell you that we're going to have an open forum for discussion and that's going to be, you know, pick us whatever it is. And then they want employees or they expect employees to be all good with it, right? Meanwhile, depending on the culture of the organization, how long tenured are your folks? How new are your folks? How, you know, what's happening within your classifications of people that are different, that are adverse to change, that don't understand what's happening, that need, you know, 2 weeks to process, and you got to fill out this survey in 3 days or so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
And so in that respect, employees may have sort of this constant kind of movement with their jobs or their responsibilities or their expectations. I go back and I maintain a firm stance in when you sit down with your employer at the beginning of the review cycle, there are some set goals, right? There should be, if you're doing performance management right, even if you're doing it terribly, there got to be some goals.
There'll still be some goals.
Hopefully you're doing it right. And if you're listening to me, you're not doing it right, I can hook you up. But if you have some performance management goals, you go back to those. If everything is changing and it's all over the place, you say, hey, you know, I have these performance goals that we discussed 6 months ago. How does this change, or how are these new projects aligned with that? I want to make sure that when it comes time to my review or how I'm going to be measured for my performance this year or how my, you know, some employers are merit-based, some employers are across the board, but for different things, the performance reviews should matter, or you shouldn't be doing them, right? And so if they matter, and if they have value to the organization, how are these random things that you're assigning me going to play out in how you assess my performance, right? How are these random things going to play out in what your expectations of success look like for me? How are these random things going to play out in terms of my ability to move up or to advance in the system, right? Again, it's really about researching and asking thoughtful questions to the bosses that be.
And it's timing, wouldn't you say, Dr. Lonnie? It makes me, and Dr. Candace, it makes me think about my career over the years when there were mergers that they called mergers, and in most cases they were takeovers, not necessarily mergers. And so good news is you kept your job. Bad news is that a lot of people lost their jobs, and those who kept their jobs took on more responsibility and more responsibility and more responsibility. And I saw burnout at its worst. I saw suicide. I saw illnesses, and people who were just strained to the limit and out of fear, taking on those other duties as assigned became a norm. And I think we have to be careful that we don't get pimped out in situations like that.
Wait, what's that again? Say it again. I'll make sure I heard you right. Wait, say it again.
You heard it right. Disclaimer. I'm clutching my pearls.
Wait a minute now.
We have to be mindful.
Dr. Wendy on this. Go ahead.
We have to be mindful that that doesn't take place and protect ourselves for our own well-being. Now, you know, there's a lot of buzzwords in the workplace, but they can easily get forgotten when these things take place.
So, well, Dr. Wendy, instead of pimped out, we're going to use
this is why we had this disclaimer, and this is why we needed a person who is certified as a senior HR professional to get Wendy in check. That's it.
We're going to have some better language around. Dr. Wendy's going to get everybody fired.
Well, I listened to the access point. And I went in and said, you can't call me no more after 5. See my smoke. Is that in my job description? No. You trying to pimp me out.
Please stop it. Please stop. This is unacceptable. But, you know, I'm trying to think of the title of the book.
See, you done baffled her.
Right. I'm just at a loss for words now.
You got us speechless
but
now.
But the idea is to have and be versed in having courageous conversations. And courageous conversations take...
There we go.
Yeah, right? It's at the center of what's important and what's hard, right? And that's when you get to something that's important and both hard, you have to formulate a courageous conversation around that topic. Workplace issues are very sensitive because it is at the very livelihood of someone's existence, right? When you think about what is work and how we show up in those spaces and who we are is for the most part, some people work and they don't have to, but the many or majority of us work because we need to take care of our families and ourselves, right? We want to be productive members of society. And so work becomes very important, so much so that there's many research studies that say once people retire and they don't have something to do, they perish, right? So they die in a relatively short time. So work is fundamental to many of our identities. And it's really difficult for people to separate who they are in their organizations from who they are in general, right? And so one of the things, you know, when people would say, you know, describe your, you know, who are you? And most people would say, you know, if you're at work and they ask you one of those things, they would say, well, I'm, if you're a parent, you might lead with that, right? You might say I'm a mom or a dad or a parent in however capacity you parent. And then, or you might say something, well, you know, I'm a PhD and I do the research on this and that and the other, right? And so that's how we even opened our discussion today. We identify by those credentials and accolades that we've worked hard to achieve, right? Including our job titles. And so I actually, not too long ago, for about a year now, when people ask me to introduce myself, I say, I am Candace. I'm fun. I'm witty. I'm kind. And I said, oh, and also I'm all of these nice things that I worked so hard and paid a lot of money to get, right? Yeah. But many people don't lead with that. They lead with their identity that work brings to them and for them. And so it's a critically important thing. And again, your personal values is deeply embedded in that. So a lot of my work on change management, even leadership, comes from Edgar Schein. Like he is, that's my dude, right? And he has these layers of organizational culture that says, what you see at the top are these artifacts, right? What can I readily identify within an organization? How you talk, how you greet, what's the sexy stuff on your webpage? What can outcome outsiders readily identify as who you are, right? That's what that is. And then at that next level is sort of like our shared values. Like, so what do Lonnie and I and Dr. Wendy think about what it means to be at this organization? What do we share with newcomers? How do we tell them to be here, right? So our shared values, if you will. And then one step under that is that subconscious way that we operate without even knowing that we're doing that, right? That's our basic underlying assumptions. That's the stuff that outsiders cannot see, that we cannot dig away, that even if you get into the organization some kind of way, and not unless you're deeply embedded in there, you don't understand, right? And so those are the things that happen from a point of systemic bias and racism, right? That's where we're getting that from. People don't even know they're doing some of the things, right? The microaggressions that show up as everyday language, and that people of color have to bear the brunt of, right? So the onus, though, while it's important for you as an individual to create, as we started the conversation, some boundaries, right? The onus should never be on the employee. The onus is on the organization, but here's the tricky thing about organizational studies and organizational culture. The organization gets the culture from all them people in there.
That's right.
Who is the dominant persons of the organization, and how does that organization work from a cultural capacity? And so that's really, really important when we talk about, you know, is my ability to say no and still be considered for promotions there? Is my ability to say no to something that doesn't serve me well, that's misaligned with my personal values, will I still be considered for a good project or opportunity, right? Is my ability to say no going to dissuade somebody from thinking about my name when the conversation comes up on who should be next, right? And so that's a cultural thing. That's a cultural thing. And we've got to understand the organizations in which we work. So, you know, earlier in my career, when employees would frustrate me, I'd be like, well, why do you still work here? Sometimes I would say it to them, and sometimes I would say it in my head, but my face would probably show it, even though I wasn't saying it out loud, right? But the thing is, oftentimes people aren't as free to jump ship and go somewhere else when something isn't working inside of their organization. And so it's important for organizations to really keep that in mind. Like, how are you doing? Are you pulsing your your community, your organizational community to see what's working and what's not working. Have you created a community of trust where people feel like they can say something and not be belittled, excoriated, outcasted, blackballed, for saying something, right? So these are the things that come from the leadership, because leadership sets the tone for culture. Now, there can be many subcultures, right? So subcultures could be happening all over the organization, but the tone of the organization is set by leadership. And so if I go back to Shine's model, you know, you can look at almost any organization in America, big, small, or indifferent, and you'll see that sexy EEO statement at the bottom about how the equal opportunity works or doesn't work, right?
The warm and fuzzy.
Right? And then you ask to see, or you click on the leadership button, meet our team.
And then
speaking, conversation is over. Meet our team. Yeah. You will see the diversity councils, the faculty councils on diversity and this, that, and the other. And you can go to corporate organizations too. I do a lot of work in higher ed spaces, but also outside of the higher ed spaces, and you will see that. But then you click on that little button to meet the team. And you're like, oh, what? Look, how the kids say, what had happened to them?
We're not quite sure.
The women, the folks of color, they didn't come for picture day, because what happened, right? And again,
Wendy told them, don't get picked out of there.
Don't do that.
Don't let them take your picture.
You know, right? One of the things that I'm thinking of is for leaders to provide that environment. We also have to think about how employees feel about extra work or other duties as assigned. And so it is our responsibility at work to ask questions. Like you said, there are key questions to ask, because you want to consider, are you being stretched or are you being stressed?
Yeah, I love
Are you being asked to do something that may be outside of your comfort zone to help you develop a skill set to move you further along in your career? Or is this just additional work that is stressing you out and it has nothing to do with what you want to do in the future? So you have to, your responsibility as an employee is to come to work and have a plan. Like, you should always have a personal development plan. We had a guest, Deborah, who always said, have your own personal board of directors to help you figure out what that looks like for yourself, right? And then move into what other duties as assigned really fit into that scope.
So let me, there's one thing I want to add to this, and I think this is important, because we're raising so many really important issues. Because I saw this, Microsoft has this thing called the Work Lab, and it was interesting that they have some, what they're calling some new terms, right? New terms about the workplace. I think this is fitting for what we're discussing here. One of the terms they have is goblin mode. Have any of you ever heard of goblin mode? Never heard of that, right? So it says goblin mode is shedding a version of yourself, sort of think of wearing a mask or code switching at work, that creates a greater sense of freedom and authenticity. We've got a few others. Human energy crisis. So there's this collective depleted state of enthusiasm, motivation, and mental health due to social unrest, instability, economic uncertainty, stuff like that. JOMO, I love this one. The joy of missing out rather than the fear of missing out. NTD. If you're texting NTD, so need to drop. I didn't know that. And people have probably sent that to me. And I'm like, I don't know what that is, but they're gone. NTD needs to drop. No KRs. Now, this is important, because we're used to seeing like key result areas. This is saying there are no key results from this. So if someone's talking with you about a task, be very clear. This is not a priority, right? Just FYI information. And I like this one too. Worth it equation. So it's about prioritizing well-being and health. So what really matters? And so what's the worth it equation that we're talking about? My question to both of you, and this will be our last question for this conversation, is what terms do we need to give people about work? right? So there's this whole list of things that we're adding to the dictionary and glossary of how people, and we're talking about, and even, I think we need to give some more Dr. Candace to Dr. Wendy with her mouth, right? So as we're talking about how to help people change the narrative and change the experience here, what words should we add to this list? What's the new terminology people need to go in and be empowered when they're saying no?
So I'm going to say square to the second power.
Come on now.
So the square are the boundaries all around you to protect you and your joy, your energy. Mm. So I'm going to say square to the second power.
I'm going to say no mask mode. You know, we show up with this mask all the time, right? So I think it's something like the goblin, but it's more because we are completely masked. Mm-hmm. And when you think about Black folks in general, we have, or even folks of color, people who English is not their primary language. We're masking ourselves all the time. We're masking our accents. We're masking our look. We're masking the food that we put in the microwave. We're masking a lot of things.
Who bought the fish?
Right. We're masking quite a few things so before we even get to log into the computer, we have already run through so many mental laps, right? Before we even log in to start the day, who am I? Do I have my right face on? Is my lipstick too red? Are my curls too big? This is the right hairstyle for today. You know, oh, did I just laugh too loudly? These are the things that we're going through as people of color, especially when you're showing up in whether it's middle management and especially senior management. And for many of us, we are the only or the first, right? So now we're carrying the torch for the whole gender and the whole race, right? Because we don't want to muck it up to ruin it for ourselves. But in my sort of thinking, ruin it for someone else because, we gave so-and-so a chance, and how did that go? And now nobody else gets a chance after you.
That's true.
So can we show up and just do a good job without our mask? You know, I think success and fending for yourself has become a solo sport at work. And this is especially true for Black and brown leaders. And this is without discrimination to level or experience, right? And I don't think the onus should be on us. It shouldn't be a solo sport. I think companies have to be a part of what's right and how we support people so that they have a good sense of belonging in that organization. And that how they show up for work is the beauty of diversity, right? Is the beauty of, so I talk with an accent.
Yeah.
Right? Or, so I don't blow dry my hair because I like it cute with these curls, or I like my dashiki wrap on the top of my head, or whatever it is, or I'm wearing a hijab, or I'm just whatever it is. Like, how does that, you paying attention to that, distract you from the work that has to be done? And many employers will say, we can't send so-and-so to the client meeting. They speak with a heavy accent. Well, first of all, they're smarter than all of us because they know how to speak two languages.
Come on now.
Or three languages, right? But yet we're really concerned about how so-and-so is going to show up to the client because they have an accent. That just really takes away from the value and experience and expertise that having those different perspectives, having multiple languages or multiple cultural contexts helps to enrich whatever it is that you're going into, right? So that was a long answer.
Yeah. And that's where we are, right? So the things we learned from this conversation today about boundaries and saying no, get someone else to do it, is that for the employee, check to see, is there a disconnect between what you value and the organizational culture? And we've talked about that multiple times on the Access Point. We wonder here, who are you declining? Dr. Candace said, somebody got to get that, the other button, the red button on the phone. Are your values about action setting, right? Are you taking action toward these ways you say you want these boundaries to show up? Dr. Wendy encouraged us at 5 o'clock, see my smoke. I'm out of here. Understand there is a time when you need to relax your boundaries. There's some appropriateness to that, and you got to figure out what makes sense for you and for your career. And keep in mind that the things you do now, you've got to also do later. And so some of those things can set you up for success, or it can set you up for something other than success. Dr. Candace was very explicit about this. Figure out how to turn the table on these obnoxious requests. How does this support my goal for this year? How does this support our success for this unit? I'm glad you think I am the best person that can support you here. Is there a different timeline we could think about? Be encouraged and empowered to revisit performance goals and make sure that these requests that you're getting are aligned with how you're being evaluated. And ask yourself, are you approaching success as a solo sport? Because many of us are carrying that burden, but it really should be the onus on the organization. From the leaders, managers, and supervisors, we want you to recognize when this is a you problem, that your request is about you, not about me. That this crazy thing that's outside of my scope, that's outside of my job description, which Dr. Candace reminded us is a legal document, is really about what you need to get done, not what I have to worry about. Understand that there is an employee voice that is represented by the no. When you hear someone say no, when you recognize someone setting boundaries, they are also speaking about what they value and how they want to show up and how they want to be treated. Clarify expectations so we don't have these weird requests for people to have to say no. Move away from what Dr. Wendy explained to us around smoke and mirrors. And so do this for now. Or this is not time for your promotion. Or take this on just because, and give people clarity around what this means in terms of their longevity and their path in your organization. And I love this piece for our supervisors, managers, and leaders. Are you stretching someone with your ask, or are you stressing them with your ask? From groups and teams, we want you to develop a list of thoughtful questions that help you commune around the types of things you experience and support a different culture or even a different climate in your work unit. Are you protecting each other from the language that Dr. Candace says we shouldn't use, but Dr. Wendy said? Are you protecting each other from being pimped out in these spaces? Help each other with courageous conversations. That might mean be the friends I get to talk to about it. When I get the request from my boss, can I call you, Dr. Candace, and say, here's what they asked me. Here's what I want to say. Help me walk through this. Support each other with your own identities. And Dr. Candace reminded us that we come to the job before we sign in, but all the mental gymnastics we have to go through to be there and help people figure out themselves versus work versus tasks versus these additional asks. Build communities of trust with your coworkers and get clarity around why you still work here. From the organizations, we want you to hold leaders accountable for the scope of work. Remember that the expectation, understand from senior leadership, what expectations are set by the culture that is permeated. Ensure that equity and fairness with job roles and responsibilities and all these requests where people are saying no and setting boundaries is checked. Remember, Dr. Candace reminded us that boundaries are the responsibility of the organization, not the employee. So that while the onus comes on us in these times and these crazy moments, but it really is about how the organization sets these things up so we don't have to deal with that. We learned two new things I want you to add to your glossary. In addition to what I love was JOMO, the joy of missing out. Hey, count me out of that one. I'm first to say that. We said square to the second power, right? About creating your boundaries. And operate in no mask mode. I love when we get to go through these expressions of what we learned today. What I want to ask now to my wonderful co-host, Dr. Wendy, and our extraordinary guest, Dr. Candace, if people are listening to this and decide not to take heed to this, what is the tax they pay? What is the black and brown tax for not listening to what we talked about tonight? Dr. Candace, you first.
You finna get no promotion.
You finna
be passed over.
Okay, I love it.
That's plain and simple. That it is gets it. No better than that.
No better than that.
I say find your sweet spot. Know how to ask the right questions when you're asked to do the other duties as assigned.
I agree.
And I want to reaffirm this one, because when someone first said it to me, I thought it was profound. And then Dr. Candace mentioned it today, and I know our producers mentioned it, but no is a complete sentence, right? That you can stand by that. Now, you might face some consequences for it, but you have to identify where are your values and when do you say no. And it is okay to say no. Thank you so much for joining us for this talk. Excuse me. We always discuss a lot and love we get a chance to keep this conversation going. You can listen to The Access Point wherever you get your podcasts. Remember to like, share, comment, and subscribe. We also want to make sure that you know that you can find all of the research and articles that we reference on, what is that, Flipboard, right? So you can follow The Access Point on Flipboard. Just go to flipboard.com/@ The Access Point for all of those links. It has been a great time as always. If there's something else you want to talk about, if you had an aha moment and some thoughts for a future discussion, use the hashtag TAP Reflections. So that's TAP for The Access Point Reflections across all your social media. Let us know. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.